Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And I would say that if you are a 72-year-old person in America, you are unlikely to be working. I would say that I am in a minority of people that age who are still working, very lucky to be working. The most prominent people who are working at this age are all running for president. They're the president right now, or they're trying to be the president right now. So that, I guess, is what I could do next.
Yeah, 2024.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, I'm here. I'm at, again, the north end of the table, of Uncle Benny's table. Michael Kornheiser is at the south end of
Southwest.
Of Uncle Benny's table. Chessy the dog, who's just caught frisbees for a while, is back in the house, and we don't know if she's going to yell and scream
waking up the
later on. Yeah, so and I just thought there's a bunch of things I want to get to, and so we won't do a traditional open. We will do a hodgepodge open today before we get to our guests, who are Mark Feinsand of MLB.com and James Andrew Miller, Jim Miller of the Origins podcast, is going to talk about something he's done on a really terrific movie called Almost Famous. But I'm going to start with something actually important. If you're listening to this today and you have forgotten to do your taxes, that's troublesome, because today is the day you have to have your taxes. I don't think you have to have them in. I think you have to have them postmarked today. I think they have to be on their way to your local state government and the United States Treasury. I think that has to be today. And I know that my friend Steve Rose, who's Michael's friend and my friend, Steve Rose, who's an accountant, this is the day that, like, this is the last day of the 26-hour days for Steve Rose, right? I mean, he's talked to you about that. He holes up.
It's his Super Bowl.
Yeah, it really is. It's a really big day. So please do that. The second thing, and I want to involve Nigel in this, because Nigel, it's not the question of, oh, I forgot. He does it every single time. He forgets every single time to talk about Bethesda Bagel.
Bethesda,
so why don't you... Why don't you do it now? You forgot on Monday.
Push the button.
You forgot.
I did. Yes. Well, I don't even have the buttons to push anymore. Sean does that, so I'm just totally useless. But yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. We get our bagels from every time we do a show. You love them as well. BethesdaBagels.com. The one we go to in Bethesda is open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. But again, go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location near you, and they've got everything you need. They're just fantastic.
Yes, and they brought us bagels today, which is good. I wanted to mention, I wrote these things down, I wanted to mention sort of how thrilling it is for me. I always talk about the connective tissue on the show. For me, that the two people who have reached out to us in wineries in Oregon, in the Willamette Valley, Duska Jensen, the wine ambassador, and Dave Spector from Bells Up, people have contacted them. People have bought wine from them. You're smiling. You're grinning, Michael.
I'm only smiling because of where I know you're going
to
take this. So I'll just
say
that's,
me free
that's a
wine.
Very skillful opening based on our birthday
dinner. Send us more
Sunday,
wine. Yeah.
You go, you know what? These people need to send me some more wine.
Right. No, they do. They need to send more wine. But I just think that's also, it's the same thing that I feel about Roberto Dona, that so many people who listen to this show have signed up for the meals every single week from Roberto Dona, which we had last night. We had salmon last night. It was just, it's wonderful. So that sort of makes me happy. It's extended family. Is there something in it for me? Sure, there's always something in it for me. Of course, what do you think I'm doing this for? You think I'm nuts? Let me read a few things here. Matt in Silver Spring. Hello, Mr. Tony. First, longtime listener, first time emailer. I know you're a Channel 4 guy, but I'd love it if you could give a shout out to my sister-in-law, Olivia Garvey, who just started as the weekend sports anchor for WJLA Channel 7. She's moved to D.C. from California and is incredibly excited to be part of the D.C. sports world. That's apparently Steve Garvey's daughter.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? Now, I am not a 7 person, but I wish her all the luck in the world. It's so tough to do sports now. Like, I watch Channel 4. The people they bring in to do sports, they're on for 30 seconds. They have no impact whatsoever. They, you know, grin and try to be funny and try to integrate themselves into the newscast as a whole, which you can't do because there is no newscast
just
as a whole.
Just give us the weather.
You know, yeah, there's no newscast as a whole because nobody's sitting in there. There's no camaraderie. This is the problem we have with this podcast. The best podcast we have is when we sit in the studio and there's five of us and we play off each other's, you know, cues. And they don't have that on sports anymore. It's a tough time to break in. John in Rockville, what a great story about you and Michael's shared love of golf on golf.com. But it wasn't in golf. Was it golf? It's the golf magazine.
It was shared through the website, but yes, it was okay. In the magazine.
I laughed out loud when I got to Michael's quote. It appears you didn't hit a good shot. But the real point of my email is this. Do you know where Michael's first sub-80 scorecard is today? I don't. Do you?
I'm sure, I've it's, kept in the ones I'm sure that, it's in the basement. We've kept the sub-60s.
Yeah. No, the sub-70s.
Sub-70s.
Okay. You haven't gone sub-60.
Not yet. Well, for nine holes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've done that too.
No, I was thinking about sub-80 because it was back in early high school, late middle school. You made the mistake of saying to me, as soon as you become a single digit, I will take you to the Masters.
Which I did. And, which you did.
No. Well, years later, as soon as, well, I broke 80 and became a single digit regularly, you said, why don't we just put this off till you graduate high school?
Did you have a good time?
Best time.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan.
Philip W. Braddock in San Francisco. I'm still waiting on the results of my colonoscopy. Any update? Whoops, wrong doctor. Let's try this again. Hey, Dr. Porthauser, after hearing the show, this was in early June, I decided it was my turn to embrace the connective tissue of the show. So what did I do? You guessed it. I called Willamette Valley Vineyards. In fact, I just got off the phone with Madam Jansen. She couldn't have been nicer. She helped me pick a few bottles, and by a few, I mean a case, and we chatted freely about the show and our experience as listeners. A huge thank you to Duska Jansen, the entire Willamette Valley Vineyard crew, and you, Mr. Tony, for connecting us littles who would otherwise be disconnected. So, see, this is my whole point. This is what we do. This is fine. From Thomas Pace, Tom Pace in Lakewood, Ohio. We never got to these. These are the Wes Unseld emails. We never got to these. So I'm catching people up. This is the catch-up show. I've enjoyed hearing for the past week the numerous tributes and testimonials to the late Wes Unseld from you, Wilbon, David Aldridge, and others. I grew up in Louisville and was aware of a young age of Unseld's greatness. My dad was a high school basketball coach in Louisville during the 60s. One of his closest friends, a man named Carl Wright, was Unseld's JV basketball coach at Seneca High School and the man Unseld credits with making him fall in love with the game. Please allow me to tell my favorite Wes Unseld story. In 1964, now that is 56 years ago, in 1964, my dad was the head basketball coach at Valley High School in Louisville. During one game, Dad was patrolling the sidelines, watching his team battle Seneca. At one point, a loose ball bounced toward the sidelines. As my dad went to retrieve it, a massive hand reached out in front of him, grabbing the bouncing ball with that one hand and fired a full-court pass to a teammate for an easy layup. It was 17-year-old Unseld. My dad turned to his assistant and merely said, "Bill, we're in trouble." Wes Unseld went on to go to the Hall of Fame. We got a bunch of these. Wow, I guess I'll do one more. This is from Kevin Hamilton in Ackworth, New Hampshire. As a longtime listener, I thoroughly enjoyed the Rhapsodies to Wes Unseld. My sole encounter with the Hall of Famer came in 1974 when I was a Northeastern University freshman by day and a busboy by night at a restaurant next to the Boston Sheraton Hotel, a popular stop for NBA clubs. From the kitchen one night, I looked on the floor and spied Phil Chenier and McCoy McLemore sitting side by side in a booth. Wanting a closer look, I strolled out to clear a couple of nearby tables and was astonished to see Wes sitting opposite his teammates, filling the entire 6 feet of horizontal bench space. I have since learned that when barrels describe a particularly brawny figure, they use the term Unseld-chested. That's funny. A sidebar, if I may. Like you, I grew up a Knicks fan, though in Long Island City. A month later in that same restaurant, I noticed two other familiar faces enjoying a midnight meal, backup New York point guard Henry Bibby and cult figure in the making Hawthorne Wingo. I summoned the courage to introduce myself to Bibby, and I said, "What's a Knicks fan doing in Boston?" And Bibby asked, "What's a Knicks fan doing in Boston?" I explained my scholastic situation. We enjoyed a brief conversation. Bibby and Wingo returned on their next trip to town. We arranged to meet for drinks, whereupon they gave me tickets for the following night's game, Eastern Conference Finals, Celtics versus Knicks Game 5, which turned out to be a Boston victory, and Dave DeBuscher's final game. I idolized DeBuscher. At the final whistle, my buddy and I decided to crash the Knicks locker room. Security then was not what it is now. However, before long, we were hopelessly lost in the bowels of Boston Garden. We revised our goal to simply find our way out. We suddenly turned a corner and found five cameramen huddled outside a doorway. One by one, they emerged. Clyde, the Pearl, Dollar Bill Bradley, Willis, Bibby and Wingo, and then number 22. We pounded his shoulder, shouted, "Way to go, Dave," and we were rendered speechless as the TV lights dimmed. We levitated up the ramp only to discover Dave signing autographs. We ran to the forward. He signed for my friend, then for me, then hopped on a team bus. Dave DeBuscher's last autograph as a pro still hangs in a frame to this day. Isn't that nice?
What a great story.
from Tom Tindira. What time is it? Okay, I still have some time. Tom Tindira, is Mr. Tony a painter? I'm a watercolorist, and I noticed the painting behind Mr. Tony changing every few days on the PTI show set. I'm not a painter. Carol has painted many of the things that you see. Sometimes we have photographs. Sometimes the kids' artwork is in there as well.
I think my first grade painting made it up one day.
Yes, you know, and Elizabeth.
We've had people reach out wondering if they could purchase Carol's artwork. I said she just works for, you know, exposure, but...
I don't know. I think she should sell it. From Tony Beeson. The great Tony Beeson, who has a piano. Dear Captain Kornheiser, my child, a masculine child, was to be married this coming fall in downtown Cincinnati. However, given the growing uncertainty surrounding the pandemic, the young couple has decided to move their marriage up to the end of this month, July 31st. This has created a challenge. The minister who was to perform the ceremony is not available under such short notice on that date. Please help. I've heard you say on multiple occasions, I am the captain now. As a captain, you should be authorized to perform a marriage ceremony on water. If you could, please join us on the Cincinnati Riverfront on Friday, July 31st. We should be able to procure a small boat, raft, or jet ski and put out a few feet from shore onto the Ohio River. Here is the live read that I would ask you to use. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here, blah, blah, blah. At this point, please tell an amusing marriage anecdote or provide a brief bit of sage marital advice. After the story, please state the following. Okay, let's cut to the chase. Do you take him? Point to the bride and await the answer. And do you take her? Point to the groom and await the answer. Note, if the groom hesitates, grab him by the lapels, slap him in the face, and say, act like a man, like Don Corleone did to Johnny Fontaine in The Godfather. Conclude the ceremony. Alrighty then. I now pronounce you man and wife. Mazel tov. Where's the buffet line? And who's going to validate my parking? I'm out of here. That's from Tony Beeson. Isn't that wonderful? It's just wonderful.
Lovely.
And I wanted to get to one other thing. And this came to me weeks back from a listener named Larry Talent, T-A-L-N-A-N-T. And he writes, you and the crew make my day with the show, and I can't wait for the full 5-day-a-week TK fix, which we would love to have, and which I should say to you people, when sports comes back, we'll do it. We'll do it much more than we're doing it now when sports comes back, but there's no sports at the moment. Instead of the run-of-the-mill ask, I wanted to show my appreciation instead with a gift from me to you. It seems we share the same love of music. If you are like me, you can't find all the types of songs you like in one place. That, dear man of orange, is where my gift comes in. I own a company that designs, installs, and programs internet streaming radio stations, and I want to give you a station. No strings, no cost, no nothing. Just Mr. Tony Radio playing all the music you like with no commercials, no jocks, and no repeats every couple of hours. Little Richard, Barbara Streisand, The Beatles, Frank Sinatra, The Big Bopper, Show Tunes, Kinks, Sam and Dave. Well, hell, you get the point. We could even play the submissions sent into the show by the artists from around the country. Bottom line, other littles that share your taste, my taste in music, can have yet another Tony tent to huddle under. You decide the mix of genres, and I tweak the programming to mirror that sound. Here's the link to my model home station, and you, Michael, Nigel, etc., can give it a listen and hopefully hear the potential. For me, hearing the right mix of music is an emotional, visceral experience. It's subjective, but also shared by others. If what I propose resonates, I can build it in 72 hours. If not, just realize how many of us love the show and appreciate your efforts, along with all the regulars, including Saliza. Larry Talent, your own FM. Now, I have held on to this for months. Haven't mentioned it for months.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I think I'd like to do it. I think I'd like to write hundreds of songs out.
Yeah, we can create substations too, so the original music can be on its own.
So feed. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Isn't that nice? It's your own FM, Larry Talent. Anyway, all right, we will take a break. Thought that was fun. I'll hold on to this. We will take a break, and we will come back. Is it Mark Feinsand first, or is it Jim Miller first?
It's Mark Feinsand first, yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So we will be back, and I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Let's do the Simply Safe read. What's the number one sign of a bad home security system? A home security system that's so complicated you never use it. This is exactly the type of security system Simply Safe has spent a decade fighting against. They believe that simple is safer, and it's exactly why Simply Safe is the home security for right now, when feeling safe at home has never been more important. Simply Safe was designed to be easy to use while protecting your whole home 24/7. Order online with the click of a button. open the box, place the sensors, plug it in, and your home is protected around the clock. No technician or salesperson has to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fees or sign a two-year contract. And now it's my turn to tell you how easy it is to install. I have no idea. I don't know how to install anything. Michael, you've installed
now, this. Now it's my turn to say how I opened the box, Nigel and I put it up, and it is still recording in the studio.
I hope that those savages who have come into the studio and ruined the studio,
camping out.
I hope that it records them all the time. SimpliSafe was named Best Overall Home Security of 2020 by U.S. News & World Report, and their 24/7 professional monitoring and emergency dispatch starts at 50 cents a day. Head to simplisafe.com/Tony and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That is simplisafe.com/Tony, and remember that Simply is spelled differently than you think. It's spelled S-I-M-P-L-I.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Michael Noah doing a cover of a Bob Dylan song, I believe. He's writing to you. Oh, he says, I'm writing to you from hot and equatorial Singapore. The country remains largely in lockdown with almost nowhere to go and nothing to do when not working from home. I'm trying to bring some light to the situation by releasing a new song every month. Here is If Not For You. That's new from him, but this is a song that exists, which is available on Apple Music, Spotify, and wherever music is sold. I hope you like it. Thank you for continuing to be here during these dull days. He is going to play in Mark Feinsand, but before we get to Mark Feinsand, we have an email from Landon Fisher in Knightdale, North Carolina. I'm neither a New Yorker nor from your side of the street, but I loved Camp Talk with Mark Feinsand. There's no logical reason for me to have enjoyed it, but I was smiling the whole time. It's these things that make the show what it is. And P.S., tell Michael, my wife is also an avid rooter of plants. You have rooted, there's a pepper plant out in the back that you, that.
Yes, but I was referring to the ficus benjamina that you got from one of your friends 45 years ago.
Yes, Peter Lazarus.
Yes.
Peter Lazarus gave us that plant, and it's more than 45 years ago.
And it has not been repotted since.
And you have repotted it.
Well, I have a new plant.
Feinsand couldn't care less about this.
Nope.
No, and that's not why he's on. You don't do anything with plants, do you?
I don't really. I do nothing at all with plants.
You don't have a green thumb. You're not a green thumb guy.
Not remotely.
Let's get to the early question, which is what day allegedly is opening day?
July 23rd. There will be the Nationals and the Yankees and the Giants and the Dodgers.
That's 8 days from now, if I do the math correctly.
Yes, sir.
Will this happen? That's the other question. Will this happen? Will there be baseball?
And B, has anyone seen Robles or Soto?
Where are Robles and Soto? Are they around?
I think anybody who's not around, you have to assume that there was either a positive test or they were exposed to somebody who was positive with coronavirus. It's tricky. Obviously, we've known all along this was going to be a tricky situation to try to pull this off. But I think when the intake testing happened and you had, I think, 31 players and a handful of staff members, and then, you've seen some more positive cases since, but I think most people thought there was going to be a lot more. When you gathered 1,800 players and 1,000 or 2,000 staff members and such, coming in from all over the country, all over the world, we don't know sort of who had been smart about the way they lived their lives during the pandemic, and they came in, and it was about 1%. And I think at that point, I started to believe that there was going to be baseball, because I thought if they had come in and there was 100, 150 people positive, that was going to be an issue. But I think the numbers have been better than most people expected, and it seems like the players are taking it seriously and doing the right thing.
There is no bubble for baseball. This is a big distinction that baseball has from hockey and from basketball, as we learn about the bubbles in those sports. The bubbles to me, and I'm not that kind of doctor, but the bubbles to me make sense. They make sense that if you're in there and it is a coronavirus-free environment, you can keep it that way. But there are no bubbles in baseball. There's not anything that says you can't be with your family, you can't go to the store, you can't go out. I mean, logically, Mark, it tells me that it just can't work without a shutdown here, there, or everywhere. What about you?
I think, you know, they had proposed the bubble, you know, the Arizona plan back in whatever month that was. God, I lost track of months. It was going to be a different situation. You know, the NBA has 8 regular season games and then the playoffs, and, you know, every week or 10 days, half the teams are going to go home.
That's right. That's right.
You know, the NHL, the same thing. Baseball is starting from scratch, and you've got 30 teams. You don't have 15 ballparks in a city, or even, you know, I guess Arizona would have been the only one that had anything close to the number of facilities you needed. And look at Arizona now, so it's a good thing they didn't do that. That's why I say the players have to be smart. The players have to take this seriously, because there is nothing that says you can't go to the store and you can't do this. There are rules when they're on the road as far as leaving the hotel. You know, I think the bubble plan is going to have its own issues, too. I mean, you know, Disney's in this bubble, but all the people who work at Disney are going home every day. So it's not really a bubble, right? It's a bubble with a little hole in it, I guess.
Right.
I think it's up to the players and the you know, coaches and managers and staff members and everybody else who's going to be, you know, the tier one and tier two people who are around the players to, you know, to take this seriously and not expose themselves to, you know, any sort of, you know, silly activity that's going to potentially get them, you know, exposed to coronavirus. But look, there are going to be people who test positive, and MLB has plans in place to deal with that. They've got these player pools and everything else. And you know, if a whole team comes down with it, then we're going to have a problem. But, you know, I think they're hopeful that the protocols they have in place are going to be enough to, you know, to keep this thing going.
So the two biggest hotspots in the country right now are Houston and Miami. They have teams. They have ballparks there. They're the two biggest hotspots. Do you think that this will go straight through with flexible rosters and however they do it? Or do you think that there will come a point where you're going to have to shut down, if not all of it, a team here, a team there, and that will cause a backup that doesn't allow you to finish at the date you want to finish?
Well, unlike you, I am not a doctor, so I really have a hard time predicting these things. Mm. You know, I would like to say it's going to go straight through. I have no idea. I think it's just a matter of, you know, you are bringing in hotels into play. So when the Mets or the Nationals or the Phillies or the Braves go to Miami, you know, they're going to be staying at a hotel in Miami, and that's dangerous right now. You know, the same thing for all the AL West teams in Houston. So, yeah.
Los Angeles has exploded again. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When this all started, everybody said, well, you know, the Yankees and Mets aren't going to be able to play in New York. And right now, New York's about the safest place there is in the country. So,
right.
You know, it's crazy. But, you know, who knows? I mean, if they can get this under control in some of these hotspots, then, you know, maybe they'll be fine in terms of being able to play this thing straight through. I'm hopeful as a baseball fan and as a baseball writer that, you know, that this all works and that they figure it out. Do I have my doubts? Watch the news every night, and it's impossible not to have your doubts. So I'm hoping that it happens. I'm hoping, like I said, I think the biggest thing is players and everybody buying in and just saying, okay, I need to be smart. I need to stay away from restaurants. I need to stay away from anywhere that's going to put me in potential danger. And, you know, you hope that the hotels that they're staying in are clean and safe, and they're following all the protocols, and they can try to pull this off.
When is it allegedly going to end? When would a Game 7 of a World Series take place?
I think it sucked the last few days of October. They were very clear about not going into November. So the regular season ends on September 27th, which is a couple of days earlier than normal, I guess. And then it's a regular postseason. So, you know, you're looking at the end of October.
And do you have faith in that, or do you think that ultimately it will be shifted to a neutral site because of weather, that it just isn't going to go straight through?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of that would depend on what cities we're talking about for the playoffs. You know, if the Twins are in the World Series and things have gotten pushed back a few weeks, then I think you'll end up looking at a neutral site. If everything stays on schedule and the Twins are in the World Series and it's the end of October and it's snowing in Minnesota, guess what? They'll be playing in Minnesota.
Who won't play? Have we heard from Mike Trout definitively? Who's not playing?
No, Mike Trout.
David Price is not playing, right?
David Price is not playing. Buster Posey announced he was not playing. They had just adopted twin babies who were born prematurely, and he decided for his family it was the best thing not to play. Nick Markakis. I believe it's 13 players altogether.
Joe Ross and Zimmerman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's so, 13 altogether. Price and Posey were probably, unless I'm forgetting somebody, which happens because I'm getting old.
Nowhere close to old. I'm old.
I think those were the biggest names. There might be one more that I'm blanking on at the moment.
Where are we on Trout?
He hasn't said anything. I think he winds up playing. I'm certainly not one to tell somebody who's expecting their first child not to play. Jordan Hicks was the other one, who's the most recent one, the real hard-throwing closer. And what was interesting about that from the Cardinals, he was the first one of the 13 that have declared they're opting out who was considered a high-risk player. He has type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So he of the 13 who have opted out, he will receive full pay and service time.
Do you have some sense of what's going to happen in Toronto?
That's been an interesting one to follow. They made some allowances for the Blue Jays to train up there because initially, they still have a quarantine rule. If you come into the country, you're
14 days.
For 14 days. They let the Blue Jays come and train there. I think they're going to end up letting the teams come play in Toronto during the season, but there's going to be very, very strict rules in place. You know, the one thing they have going for them is that the Rogers
Center
has a hotel in the ballpark.
Yeah,
and apparently there are going to be fines where if you're a player or a staff staying in that hotel and you're found to be outside, right, because there are ways to get from the hotel to the ballpark area without actually going outside. If you're found to be leaving the hotel, you're going to be fined like $75,000 or $100,000. So that would certainly be an incentive for most people not to go outside. I don't think they've officially decided that that's happening, but most people are expecting that that will happen.
Do you think there'll be fans in any ballpark for any game?
I don't. I know some teams have talked about it, but it just seems absurd right now. You know, the two teams that were talking about it initially were the Rangers and the Astros, and like you said, Texas right now is exploding as a hotspot. So I just find it hard to believe that you're going to see fans in any ballpark in any or any stadium in any sport this year, just the way things are going right now. But things can change, I guess. You know, I mean, the Rangers obviously want some people in their ballpark because it's brand new, and, you know, the first year of a new ballpark is obviously a big boon. But this is a different kind of year. We should be talking about the All-Star game today. That was supposed to be last night.
Do you have any insight into what would happen in Philadelphia? Philadelphia today came out and said no gatherings, no sports, no anything. Does that mean the Phillies can't play in Philadelphia?
You know, I've heard that a lot of the places that have said no gatherings, no sports, it was more about fans.
Right.
Because I think that was, they said for the next 6 months, was that the thing they came out
with? Till 2021. Yeah, till 2021.
Yeah, so I think that's more no spectators.
Eagles, the Flyers, the Phillies.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to affect the teams themselves, as far from what I heard.
Okay. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. It's the thing that I wonder about, the sort of larger picture. At this point, who is more powerful, Rob Manfred or Scott Boras? Who's running baseball?
I'm going to stick with the commissioner on that one. I think Boras has a lot of impact, but even within the Players Association and within the players, there are plenty of people that don't particularly care for Scott Boras and don't really care for anything he has to say. Manfred certainly has a little more power in terms of, Scott Boras wasn't the one who was able to impose a 60-game schedule. That was Manfred. So, Boras is certainly a big power player, and there's no question that he is a major influence in the sport. But there are plenty of people who Wish he would keep his mouth shut at times as well.
Thank you, Mark. Enjoy. Maybe we'll see you opening day. Are you going to cover the Nats opening day?
Via Zoom, I will be.
quick question, Mark.
That's going to be... This season is going to be Zoom filled.
So you're not going to go to games?
I'm not saying I won't be at any games, but as of right now, the protocol is that all interviews are going to be done via Zoom, even if you're at the ballpark. So, you know, that takes away a little bit of incentive to drive from New Jersey to Washington or Philadelphia or, you know, even the Bronx or Queens.
Yeah.
If you're going to go there and, yeah, you'll be able to watch the game from the press box, but then you'll get on your computer and do your interview after the game on Zoom when I can do that at home as well. So, you know, it's just, again, it's more of exposure. Why would I, you know, why would anybody risk going places if they don't have to right now?
Hey, Mark, quick question. So Justice wrote out 7 ways the Nats could repeat in 2020, but this was obviously before the Wander Suero news. Do you think he needs to give us an update?
You know, when I saw the Wander Suero news, I think of you guys immediately every time I see his name it's wonderful.
Wander somewhere else. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Mark Feinsand, boys and girls, we will take a break. Jim Miller will come with us when we come. We will talk to Jim Miller about the movie Almost Famous, which in my mind is like the second greatest rock and roll movie of all time. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. There's never a bad time to save money, but now more than ever, finding smart ways to put some cash back in your pocket can make a big difference. One way to do that is to simply save on the things you already pay for, like home insurance. If you own a home, reshopping your home insurance rates with Policy Genius could save you a good chunk of change. And the best part is you barely need to lift a finger to do it. First, you head to policygenius.com. You answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then Policy Genius will compare your policy against options from top insurers to make sure you're getting the right home insurance coverage at the best possible price. If Policy Genius finds you a better rate than what you're currently paying, they will do all the work to get you switched. You own a car as well? Policy Genius will compare your home and auto policies across different insurers and even mix and match to find you savings. They've saved their customers an average of $1,127 per year doing that. That's not getting you, you know, a new air conditioning system in Rehoboth, but that's a lot of money, $1,127. So if you'd like to put a little cash back in your pocket right now, see how much you can save by reshopping your home insurance rates at policygenius.com, PolicyGenius, policygenius.com.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the evening is over. We hope you all enjoyed yourselves, and we'll see you all again in 1974. Good evening!
Why are we playing this? Because this is like the seminal music from Almost Famous. This song, Tiny Dancer by Elton John, repeats and repeats and repeats. The movie Almost Famous is about a mythical band called Sweetwater. And it is the story of Cameron Crowe's young life. Stillwater, I'm sorry. And it is the story of Cameron Crowe's young life, who wrote and directed the movie. Jim Miller joins us now. He does the fabulous Origins podcast, which takes so much more work and effort and intellect than this garbage that we do. And so we like to dress up the show with Jim Miller every once in a while, who also knows more about ESPN and the state of my contract than even I do. And we will maybe get to that. I will preface this by saying that I believe the greatest rock and roll movie ever made, and this is just for me, is That Thing You Do, the Tom Hanks movie, which he wrote and directed, I believe, as well as Cameron Crowe doing Almost Famous. But Tom Hanks didn't have intimate experience in the rock and roll culture that Cameron Crowe, longtime writer, had. I wonder why. I mean, you can pick anything you want. Why did you pick Almost Famous? And tell us about the making of the podcast.
Well, I mean, it's a truly great movie. And I was, the 20th anniversary is coming up, and I thought, hey, this was an important movie for me. When I saw it, it just was transcendent, because not only do I love music, but people forget that Almost Famous, in a way, is a movie about journalism. It's about those old days of journalism when Rolling Stone could say to a reporter, you know what, go ahead, embed yourself with this group, report, come back with this mega meta piece on them. And so I love the journalistic aspect of it. I love the music of it. And I think it's one of the great coming of age movies. In fact, I made a whole big deal of when my daughter turned 12. I said, okay, you're 12. I think I got this right. I think you're old enough to watch this. Let's sit down and watch this movie. And it really stuck with her, to this day. So, Cameron's just a beautiful filmmaker. And it's so weird that the movie he did before this was Jerry Maguire. And it was a huge hit. He could have done anything in the world for the next movie. And he decided to do something smaller, something more personal, and something without this mega cast. And so it was fun to, I interviewed Cameron, Kate Hudson, Billy Crudup, Peter Frampton, Nancy Wilson, Frances McDormand, the whole cast, and they all deconstruct it. And turns out it was a seminal moment for all of them as well.
So let me get to a couple of people in the cast, one who is no longer with us, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Frances McDormand, who you mentioned. These are great actors. They are just great, great actors. I don't know if they had hit it big. I don't know if Frances McDormand had already done the Minnesota movie by that point.
She's already won an Academy Award.
Okay, right. So she's cast as Cameron Crowe's mom. She's really, really good. Philip Seymour Hoffman is the legendary rock and roll writer, Lester Bangs. He's really, really good. When you talk to Frances McDormand, what did she say about this role and this movie?
Well, it's interesting because it's one of the first times in her career that she's playing a mom, and she was playing totally against type, because as a human being, her instinct would be to be on the bus with Stillwater. She was a rock and roll mom. She's not, so now she's playing, a much more traditional mom who's really worried about her kid. But the great thing also was the way Cameron and others talked about Philip Seymour Hoffman, Patrick Fugit, who was an unknown 15-year-old kid from Utah who was picked basically for the lead of this movie, told me a quick story. I'll just tell you real quick. Well, there was a moment where he was doing a scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, by the way, the entire time he shot the movie was totally sick with the flu, would go across the street, throw up, had like 103 fever. I mean, a real pro. But he was shooting the scene with Patrick, and the lights of the scene were in Patrick's eyes, and all of a sudden Philip Seymour Hoffman on the set of the movie yells cut, which is like really rare for an actor to do, and said, get the lights out of that kid's eyes. I mean, he just totally put his hands on the wheels on the wheel of that movie. And I think it says a lot about Cameron that he wasn't threatened by that. When he did that, Cameron said, okay, everybody, just calm down. It's all right. Patrick, let me come on over here. We'll get the lights adjusted. Philip, no worries. But Patrick keeps on talking about how Philip was very protective of him and starting to show him, even at the age of 15, some of the tools that an actor has in their toolbox when they're, on a set. And it was just epic.
So let me just recap for people who don't know the movie, and you should definitely see this movie. It is the story of a young writer, Cameron Crowe, working a freelance piece for Rolling Stone. It names, Lester Bangs and Ben Fong-Torres and people who were very, very active in the rock and roll journalism business, though not my friend Peter Knobler, who was running Crawdaddy at that time. And it is the story of this band getting on the cover of the Rolling Stone and the story of Cameron Crowe writing about them and, as Jim says, being embedded with them. It is also a star turn for Kate Hudson, who was the daughter of Goldie Hawn, who actually looks to be underage in this. I wondered if you talked to her and her career. I don't think her career took off the way I thought it would. What are her recollections of this movie?
Kate is great on this movie, and she told me that she just recently turned 40 and she was in her therapist's office dealing with the idea of turning 40 and trying to wrap
40? Shut up. 40? Get out of here.
I know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And she was 19 when she made the movie, and she was saying all these things to the therapist. She said, I don't know. And the therapist said, I guess what you really mean is you want to be back on the bus with Stillwater.
And Kate was like, yes, this is the breakthrough. Yes, I just want to be back on the bus with Stillwater. And she said that was her moment of clarity in terms of like dealing with her therapist about turning on 40. But I think it was a huge, I mean, look, she was nominated for an Academy Award. Yeah. By the way, at the same age her mom was. And at the same time, I think one of the things that it proves is that great material doesn't come around a lot. I mean, she's obviously talented, and Billy Crudup said it to me as well, that when you know, sometimes when you get a movie like Almost Famous early in your career, it almost spoils you because you think that the next script and the script after that is going to have all the nuances and the power and the elegance that Almost Famous has, and you're going to be surrounded by Cameron Crowe, who actually is, you know, an actor's director, has a moral compass, is empathetic. I mean, those things don't like grow on trees out in Hollywood.
So I will say that there's one scene in the movie that is very problematic for me. It is an airplane scene because I'm not good at flying on airplanes. Oh, this God. Is one that I turn away every time the movie is on. I turn away from this one, Jim. But I let's talk about the kid who plays Cameron Crowe. What is his name? Because I don't know what he's done since, if anything at all, and how old, in fact, was he? He plays, the subject of his age is important in the movie because he confesses ultimately to being only 15 years old. What is his name and what has he done since?
His name is Patrick Fugit. He was 15. One quick thing about that plane scene. Jimmy Fallon told me that he kept on cracking up during the scene, so Cameron took him off the plane because he kept on cracking up. But so he had to isolate a lot of his shots. But Patrick was a kid who was just a skateboarder, and when he interviewed with Cameron said, "So are you into music?" And Patrick said to him, "Well, I got like a Chumbawamba CD," and Cameron said to him, "Well, do you listen to Led Zeppelin?" And Patrick said to him, "I'm not familiar with his work."
Okay, so a neophyte at that point.
He had no idea. But you know, congratulations to Cameron and Gail Levin, the casting director, because obviously Patrick got it right.
What happened to him? Is he still acting? Has he been in anything?
Yeah, he's still acting. In fact, he was going to be part of the cast of the reboot of 30-something, which ABC just decided not to go along with. But he was in Gone Girl, and he's been in actually, Cameron used him again, and We Bought a Zoo, and he's done other movies. But I spent about, you know, 2 hours with him. He's just a wonderful human being.
So this is an interesting thing to me, Jim, because I tried to think, because I've not seen him in anything since, and I don't know what he looks like. And if he walked into my home, I would not know him, because my image of him is strictly from this movie, and it's 20 years ago. I tried to think of other people who had big roles and then disappeared. And I came up with one name, and I don't even know if you will be familiar with this. And the reason I'm familiar with it is because I used to watch a soap opera that she was on long ago when I was working at Newsday and had nothing to do because we were a nighttime newspaper. And her name was Karen Lynn Gorney, and she played opposite John Travolta in Saturday Night.
And I see her.
Yeah. And did nothing. I mean, that was a big deal role, and nothing after that. Nothing.
I know.
Which is, that's how that business works, right?
Unfortunately, that list is long, but she's a great example of that. Patrick, fortunately, has done other work. You may not. I mean, that's the thing about Almost Famous. Cameron gives him these close-ups, and it's such a big role that it's hard. You know, it's hard to find other things like that in your career.
So Almost Famous is making the rounds on cable right now. It was on again last night. I watched about 40 minutes of it last night, and I know you love the movie. Is there another movie that you were drawn to that you would do something for Origins on?
Sure. Godfather 2.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
The list is long. I was going to do Goodfellas for the anniversary, but wound up doing Almost Famous instead, and just so happy with it because you know, obviously it's this movie that it's actually for the first time in a long time, it's fun to be on Twitter because people are writing and talking about how much it means to them and
really
what place it has on their life, in their life, and how it changed them. And it's pretty deep, and getting some pretty intense personal emails that what this movie did to people. So I'm glad it's striking a chord.
So do you want to take issue with me on my ranking of that thing you do above Almost Famous?
Well, you know, here's the thing about rankings and people's rankings. It's like food. I mean, you know, what are you going to say to somebody? I can't believe pasta is your favorite meal. I mean, it's like, yeah, that movie spoke to you. I mean, it's, by the way, it is a really great movie. I think the only thing I would say if we had to debate it, so to speak,
yeah,
is I just think that Almost Famous has more layers. It has more heart. There's a much more of a, there's a really interesting duality, like a love story that has a powerful duality to it, because obviously Kate's in love with Billy, and William, the young boy, Patrick Fugit's character,
yeah,
is in love with Kate. And the way that that, you know, plays out during the whole movie is pretty cool. And I think it also has that moment, that coming of age moment, where all of a sudden, like, you know, I mean, he loses his virginity. And by the way, I asked Cameron, I said, so am I to understand that you lost your virginity at the hands of several women? And he kind of smiles. He says, yeah, that's true. You know, it's like, I mean, there's just some powerful forces going on at Almost Famous that, I don't know. I to me, at least, it connects on a deeper level.
I will say this, that there is no, and I love That Thing You Do, but That Thing You Do skims along the top of the surface. It really does. I just happen to love it. There is nothing as layered as Kate Hudson's performance. Nothing. And Kate Hudson, again, I thought she'd be a bigger star. I did. I mean, I thought, if you ask me, I think Scarlett Johansson's a great actress. I thought Kate Hudson would be that. And am I wrong about this?
Well, I mean, look, you know, another one you could look at is Diane Lane. I remember I saw her in A Little Romance, and I thought, oh my yeah, gosh, what an amazing actress. Let's see if she has anything left. And she's had this unbelievable career, and Scarlett has an unbelievable career. I think with Kate, there's no doubt about the talent, but I think it is a question of material. And sometimes you just don't find something that is powerful again. And, you know, that's tough. The one thing that I had a lot of fun with in this podcast with, and particularly talking with Cameron, is that role originally was supposed to go to Sarah Polley. And Kate Hudson was supposed to play the sister, the role that eventually went to Zooey Deschanel. And Brad
yes,
Pitt was supposed to be Billy Crudup. And Meryl Streep at a time was going to be
the mom,
what Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
And Natalie Portman was also up for Kate Hudson's role. So one of the things that I did in episode one was talk about what a fundamentally different movie it would have been if all these other casting choices have played out. I mean, Meryl Streep, Brad Pitt, and Natalie Portman, that's a powerful lineup, but it's a totally, totally different movie.
Oh, you're right. I also should mention that Greg Garcia's dear friend Jason Lee is in this movie, who later did My Name is Earl, and he's one of, I guess he's the lead of the band, right, of Stillwater? He's the lead?
Jason, he is so awesome.
He's great.
He's a professional skateboarder, and, you know, he did a, you know, a couple movies before this, but nothing on this scope. And, you know, he says to this day, he says, you know, it's probably one of my most enjoyable professional experiences of my life.
So tell people, how can they get this? It's out. Tell people.
It's called Origins with James Andrew Miller, and it's on iTunes and Spotify, and as they say, wherever you get your shows.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Go back to bed. It's you're up too early in California time. Thank you, Jim.
When can I read your memoir?
Hmm?
When can I read your memoir?
There's no memoir. I'm not writing a memoir unless you write it. I'll just sit in a room with you and I'll say, I think this happened, but I'm not sure. But go with it. Go with it. You can make it work.
Can I just say one thing? I love yes, the idea that a guy that has spent, you know, his professional career giving opinions out and sharing in a very unvarnished way what he thinks about things and the world and everything else can't shine that light on himself. It would be a great book. Just write it.
I can't remember anything but all the lyrics to Beach Boys songs. Nobody would want to read that. I'm an idiot. I am.
Well, you
write it.
Call the book, Do It Again.
Yeah. Oh, I would. I like that. It's automatic when we talk of old friends and conversations turns to girls we know. You see, if you do that, I can't stop. Thank you, Jim. Jim Miller, Boys and Girls. It's called Origins. It's a wonderful, wonderful podcast. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Email and Jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Grammarly ad. Whether you're communicating with your team online or working on a project, Grammarly is the digital writing tool you can always rely on to get your message across clearly and effectively. Grammarly works across multiple platforms, including Gmail, Google Docs, and Slack. I've never heard of those things. There's more to writing well than catching spelling mistakes. I do know that. Grammarly can help you write confidently no matter where you are. The writing that I am doing now, by the way, and I'm going to let Michael do most of this stuff because we're going to talk about the Grammarly Premium and how that works. But the writing that I am doing now is on the happies for PTI. I sit and I write these by hand. The happy birthday, the happy anniversary, the happy trails. They take a long time for me to do, and I want them to be good. It's the only real writing that I do. Maybe Grammarly Premium can help with that. What do you think?
Yes, but what I would add for Grammarly Premium is that it's going to help you learn and grow as a writer. So a lot of times professionally you get stuck by doing plug-and-chug writing, and this will give you recommendations on tone, syntax, that your writing stands out and says what you want it to say and mean.
Grammarly Premium helps you write like a pro with advanced real-time feedback. Level up your writing for work, school, or in personal projects. Premium features include advanced suggestions on grammar, punctuation, sentence structure, and style. So it's not, what did you call it? Chug and plug?
Chug and plug.
I've never heard of that. That's cool. It's the perfect writing tool for anyone who wants to stand out with every word. Harness the power of Grammarly on every platform with their desktop editor, browser plugin, and mobile apps. Improve your writing on all your favorite sites and apps, Outlook, Gmail, Twitter, LinkedIn, and more. Don't just say it. Make a statement with clear, flawless text that's sure to impress. And you can get 20% off Grammarly Premium when you sign up at Grammarly.com/Tony. That's 20% off Grammarly Premium at Grammarly.com/Tony. I will spell it for you, not the slash Tony. You know what that is. Grammarly.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's the best thing we ever had.
Won't be hearing that this fall.
Yeah, Missouri Marching Band, the best thing we ever had. Nigel, you don't have to do the Bethesda Bagel ad because we did it earlier in the show.
That's right.
We've already forgotten it. That's it for today, but before we get to the mailbag, let me just remind you that I am a golden god. What movie is that from, kids? Thanks to our guests today, Mark Feinsand of MLB.com, James Andrew Miller, host of the podcast Origins. His latest episodes on the movie Almost Famous are available now on the usual podcast locations. Thanks as well to today's sponsors, Grammarly, Policy Genius, and Simply Safe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Mike in Burke, Virginia, in response to Surfer Boy, you said that the only way he could get a copy of the article you wrote about him, and I think I have his name here, Scott Kagan, right, was if it was found in your piles of stuff, and you're not going to do that, so it's up to Michael after you pass on. So you're telling him he has to root for your untimely passing? That seems unseemly. Yes, it does, doesn't it? From Joe Farrell in Olney, Maryland. So they need a new nickname for the football team, something that conjures up power and glory. Two words, Washington Salahi. You've got to, it's just so local. It's so wonderful and local. David Hollister, I'm an IT manager at Brooks Brothers, and I can assure you we did not go out of business. That's great.
Right.
The company filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is going through a sale process. Some stores are still closed due to COVID. We're a 202-year-old company. We're not going anywhere. We have your blazers, slacks, polos, and a very nice progressive casual product line, Red Fleece. Please see our website. You are always right, and Wilbon is always wrong, by the way. Love your shows. From Andy M. in Springfield, Virginia, my dad's birthday was July 13th. Your birthday was July 13th. Was he supposed to call you, or were you supposed to call him? Was I supposed to call you and tell you to call him? I'll take an answer off air. From Drew in Houston, Texas. As a 35-year-old, I feel fortunate to have had a David Aldridge moment. Since the coronavirus hit, I've been working out of the house on a small desk, nowhere near as big as Uncle Benny's table. With four kiddos ranging 3 to 12 bouncing off the walls every day, to escape the chaos, I walk with my 12-year-old, a feminine child, and we listen to the podcast. It had been a slow process going from comments of, what in the world is going on, to laughing way too hard at Saliza jokes. She now looks forward to the show. Conversion to a little in under 4 months. That is beside the point. Yesterday evening, I pop on the podcast when I'm cleaning up after our attempt to hold a socially distanced birthday party for a six-year-old, a masculine child, and I hear that it is your birthday. I instinctively shout out loud, "No way, it's Uncle Tony's birthday." And the 12-year-old also shouts, "No way, we know him. That is awesome. You share the same birthday as Uncle Tony." To which the six-year-old responds, "Who is Uncle Tony and did he get me a present?" No further comment needed. And P.S., tell Michael to get ready for Nerf guns and Legos for the boys. We have both of these coming out of our
ears.
I'm
so excited for the Nerf gun phase.
But not Legos, because you step on them and they kill you. I mean, they ruin your feet.
The Duplos already have.
From Jimmy in Atlanta, oh my God, Grandpa, one, your rugged looks are not keeping you on PTI. That ship sailed before you got the job. Two, there is no such thing as a moving vehicle violation under $100. Were you driving a Packard the last time you got a ticket? And three, you didn't have your license, but you had cash. Get a wallet and you can have both at the same time. Talking with you about this makes me miss my late father. From Wyatt Tuell, T-U-E-L-L. My friend Michael Severi is co-host of a local sports radio show on 1620 The Zone in Omaha. His co-host is Damon Benning, who was a Husker running back during the championship years in the 90s. Every day they have a segment where they try to guess celebrity ages on their birthday. Well, you, Mr. Tony, came up quick because they go from oldest to youngest. But don't feel bad because Patrick Stewart and Cheech Martin were ahead of you. Shane, their producer, didn't think you were 70 yet and guessed 68. Damon first said you're one of the greatest writers ever, ever, then guessed 71, which Michael replied that you were 71 yesterday. Nice that they both went for the under. Sadly, Cindy Boren was not part of the birthday game. From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi, happy birthday. When I saw that Monday's episode was entitled 72, I was immediately confused because I thought there was no way you shot a 72 during your week off. I did. I just was on 12 at the time. However, my mistake should be a reminder that you're only a couple of decades away from being able to shoot your age. So you got that going for you, which is nice. From Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado, your birthday was the other day and I didn't get a phone call from you. I guess you don't care about me. From Jason Blazer in Lake Orion or Lake Orion, Michigan. I say that all the time. Over the weekend, they demolished the remnants of the structure that was the Palace in Auburn Hills, a couple of miles down the street from me, former home of the Pistons and the infamous Malice at the Palace. Do you think that the Palace and Brooks Brothers were given a party and told how great they were? Or just the classic, get out, push the button, boom, you're out of here. And it's signed, of course, Edith Saliza. And one more from Tom Justice in Waco, Texas. And this was about David Thompson when I said to Wilbon he was from Shelby, North Carolina. And he writes, Tom Justice does, it was Crest High School in Shelby. That school was in my conference, so our gym was packed with people, scouts, and other head coaches. Rumor said Bucky Waters showed up, but never confirmed. You could not dunk in those days, as you well know, but he put on a show in warm-ups. He did jump and pat the top of the backboard. What would have people said about him if he could have dunked? The same holds true for Walton, 21 of 22 and getting called for dunking several times. He played a little more than two quarters and scored 45 points, and our team had 44 at the end of the game. Happy birthday to you and the Hammer. If you're out on your bike tonight, everybody, as always, do wear white.
Hey, what do you like, the star of your school?
They hate me.
Yeah. Well, you'll meet them all again on their long journey to the middle.